We know just a little bit more about Tennessee football after the Vols had their spring game on Saturday. What are Tennessee's strengths? What are its lingering areas of concern? And how might Tennessee be able to address those areas of concern through the transfer portal? Welcome into the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Totmeyer alongside the Knoxville News Sentinel's Adam Sparks. John Adams is out birding today, trying to get a glimpse of those black-capped chickadees. Adam, though, you were at Tennessee's spring game on Saturday, one of the few, I guess, one of the elite chosen ones who's able to be there. Attendance restrictions this year, of course, with ongoing renovations at Neyland Stadium. So I guess sweeping overview for someone who wasn't there, sort of your top takeaways from what you saw Saturday.
Nico looked fine, and I know we'll get into specifics of that. Nico looked fine. He was out of the game quickly. I had some fans that complained afterward that bought tickets or whatever or finagled a way to get tickets to be one of the 10,000, and they were really disappointed that they only saw Nico for like three drives or whatever. And, of course, I explained, you should have read my preview of the spring game, which told you that was going to be the case. We saw little glimpses of the newcomers, Chris Brazel, the Tulane wide receiver, some of the guys in secondary. Everybody came away sort of oohing and aahing over the five-star receiver, Mike Matthews, who had a long touchdown catch. So they highlighted the newcomers enough to, I think, make people excited. And spring games are all about overhype and hyperbole and all these things. And fans got enough of a taste of those things to sort of get them through the offseason, that was for sure. We had the regular, walk-on stars that some people think are going to factor into the season. They're really not. But that the people that knew what they were looking at saw enough of what they wanted to see, I think, to be excited.
So before we unpack the spring game a little bit more and maybe some of the questions you have coming out of that, let's start with a little bit of news we learned this week. Transfer portal back open now. As you reported earlier this week, Tennessee linebacker Elijah Herring is portal bound. And when I saw this news alert from your reporting, my first thought was, well, this is not great for Tennessee. I mean, Elijah Herring led the defense in tackles last year. But then I know, Keenan Peely is back from injury, adding competition to Herring at that position. But, nonetheless, this guy's played a lot of snaps. I'm sure you'd like to keep him in your program if you could. So I guess break this down. Just how big of a deal is this for Tennessee that Herring's in the portal?
Yeah, a lot of times I can be critical of players or maybe player advisors of their lack of self-awareness. Like in recruiting, you get this a lot when a guy's a three-star and he thinks he's a five-star, and you have to say, hey, dude, read the room. No, you're okay, but you're not great. And sometimes this comes into guys getting in the portal or getting out of the portal. I'll have to give Elijah Herring maybe a little credit on this one. I think he probably had a healthy sense of self-awareness. Because, yes, he started last year. He started 12 of 13 games. Keenan Peely, who was the starter, got injured in the opener. He was out the rest of the year. So that thrust Elijah Herring into the starting lineup when he really wasn't ready. He was a two playing as a one. So that's why he led them in tackles. But if, he was out with an injury, limited by an injury in spring practice, and I think he kind of read the room and said, okay, Peely's back, so he's going to start over me. So now I'm a two. I'm a backup at middle linebacker. They like this Jeremiah Telander guy who was a freshman last year. He had a chance to maybe move ahead of Herring. So now is Herring a two or he may be a three. This new linebackers coach, William Inge, who they got from Washington via Alabama, and that's a different story. But when he was asked at the beginning of spring practice what his priorities are in a linebacker, his answer was speed, 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 and more speed. And he means lateral speed and working in space and coverage and all these things. Things that Elijah Herring is, that's just honestly a weakness of his game. Elijah Herring is a downhill, stay in the box, attack the ball carrier type of middle linebacker, sort of an old school, a guy that's probably going to work well in the Big Ten if he ends up there, or a conference like that, not a guy that needs to run around in space where you're only playing two linebackers It just didn't fit him well. So he, you know, you put all that together and Elijah Herring sort of figured out that he's going to at best be a backup and maybe even back farther than that in the rotation. So he got out while the getting was good. Tennessee did not push him out. Tennessee would love to have him. Whether or not this hurts them really depends on like the health of the other guys. So Keenan Peely is a better fit for this defense, but he had a triceps injury last year. Was like I said, was out just about the whole season. He's back now. If he's healthy, you can probably absorb the loss of Elijah Herring. Arian Carter is another linebacker who may start at weak side. He was out part of last year. He was out spring with an injury. If he's healthy, you can absorb losing Elijah Herring. Jeremiah Tealander was behind Herring last year. Now maybe he's ahead of him now. But if he continues to develop, you can absorb the loss of Elijah Herring. So these are like a lot of conditional things where like the three guys I just named and other guys that are coming in are better fits for what Tennessee does. But Elijah Herring, was healthy and played every game last season. So it really just depends on the other guys. If they're out there and they're healthy, you're probably not going to notice that much that Elijah Herring is gone. But if you have injury issues again, boy, you're going to really wish you had him back because he wasn't the best fit, but he had 80 tackles and he started every game you needed him.
Yeah, I guess I look at it like this. Like on one hand, you know, I don't think you're celebrating the loss of a guy who played almost 600 snaps last season, right? I mean, he's someone that somewhere you can slot him in on the depth chart and maybe come of some use to you this year. On the other hand, you know, Pro Football Focus that does the analytical grades of players had Elijah Herring ranked as one of the lowest performing defensive players on Tennessee last year. Now, that's just one metric. It's not the only metric, but it is a relevant metric that we can use to further evaluate someone's performance. And Herring, you know, didn't measure very highly on that scale. So, yeah, they're not throwing a parade that he's heading out of town. But I guess my initial response was, oh, my gosh, they're losing their leading tackler. But, you know, those tackle stats can sometimes be deceiving, particularly when you're playing the linebacker position. Bottom line is, I don't see this as a crippling departure for Tennessee.
Yeah, and this is one of those situations where in the portal era, your value can kind of be skewed year to year. Keenan Peely was supposed to be the guy last year at middle linebacker, and then he would be gone this year. Instead, and Elijah Herring was supposed to be a backup last year, a young guy sort of learning the position because he played more of a rush end in an edge rusher in high school. So he was still learning the position. Well, now you flip-flop those. Elijah Herring is a starter earlier than he would have otherwise been, and then he has to give up his starting position because Keenan Peely, who was supposed to be gone, is still there. And so you kind of flip-flop their timelines, and you know, if you did it the way that it was planned out, then Elijah Herring would now get his chance this year, not have to be not have to be disappointed that he got a starting job, has to give it back. So, you know, maybe again, self-awareness, maybe just capitalizing on the fact that he has some value, because even though you can look at his film and pick out some hiccups to his game, he can say, I was the leading tackler on an SEC defense last year. And that's probably going to help him in the portal.
All right, let's get into quarterbacks and all three guys, Nico and Gaston Moore and Jake Merklinger, all played well in the spring game. So Tennessee obviously doesn't have a quarterback controversy. It has in some past years, particularly during the Jeremy Pruitt era, and in the end of Butch Jones era, and they can rest easy. No controversy. Nico's the guy, and looks like not only is he the starter, looks like he could be a star. So my question is there a backup quarterback controversy? How do you handicap that battle? And does it really matter for Tennessee the fact that one of these guys battling to be a backup is a walk-on, right? Gaston Moore. Is that a red flag? Or is that sort of like old way of thinking, knowing that with NIL and such, like walk-ons are not all created equally anymore, and you can do different things to reward walk-ons. And that's, to me, it's sort of a little bit of an outdated term.
Yeah, if we didn't know that Gaston Moore was a walk-on, it would probably give us a little different opinion of him, or maybe it would some. So like he was a transfer from UCF, which benefits him a lot because he's been in the system longer than anybody on the team. He played it for practiced it for a year with Heupel and Joey Halsley, the offensive coordinator, and Glenn Ellerbe. All those guys were at UCF. So he came with the offense to Tennessee. He was a walk-on there. He's a walk-on here. If, you know, last year they got, you know, Central Florida's backup quarterback and he happened to be on scholarship, you would say, well, this is a guy that, you know, played Division I football and he can do it. That's fine for a backup. So the walk-in tag maybe hurts him a little bit in terms of perception. He's been in this offense a long time. He is, some people can take these as insults, but the way I would describe him is capable, is serviceable. That's sort of how I would describe Gaston Moore. And so what that means is if Nico is out a handful of plays this year, Gaston Moore is perfectly fine. If Nico is out for multiple games this year, that may be a problem because I think Gaston Moore can get you through a game. I think he can put the ball where it's supposed to go. The offense can run efficiently. He can make good decisions. He can limit turnovers. All these sort of you know, game management type of descriptions that we have, he can do that. So, you know, could he go beat a subpar SEC team? Maybe. Could he go to Arkansas and win if all the other pieces are doing fine? Maybe. Could he be the quarterback and finish out a win over Alabama or Oklahoma? That's a harder ask. Now, people would ask, well, what about Jake Merklinger? He's the freshman. He showed some things in the spring game the other day. He's a four-star freshman. Well, it takes a while to learn this offense. He's still trying to get used to the tempo and get an understanding of the offense in the way that Gaston Moore has like a four-year head start on him. Jake Merklinger showed that he could run the ball to a certain extent in the spring game. Now, I will remind people that didn't pay close attention, quarterbacks can't get contacted in those games. So he had a couple of long runs that probably would not have been long runs had they been able to tackle him. But he's got some mobility. So, you know, knock. I don't have wood in front of me. Let's imagine I knocked on wood. If Nico had an ankle sprain in the third quarter of a game, Gaston Moore could finish that game. If Nico had an injury like Hendon Hooker did 2 years ago, especially early in the season, Jake Merklinger could eventually be an option because you have to have a guy for a longer period of time. And Jake Merklinger does have he has a wider skill set than Gaston Moore. But Gaston Moore is absolutely the backup quarterback now going into preseason camp and most likely through all of the season, I would say.
Yeah, so it's I asked about a backup quarterback controversy. It would be uncontroversial to say Nico is obviously QB1, Gaston is QB2, Merklinger is QB3.
Yeah, and that's probably the way it was. I'll be surprised if the order of those things changes at all this season.
And how about running back? I mean, we know what's there at the top in Dylan Sampson, a lot of promise there. But without Jalen Wright, without Jabari Small, what does the situation look like behind Dylan Sampson? And do you feel like the spring game offered you, you know, much of a good read on Tennessee's depth at that position?
There's enough questions behind Dylan Sampson that I have some concerns. You know, Dylan Sampson is as good of an RB1 as you're going to find in the SEC. Very productive guy that can catch it, can run it, all the sort of things. That box is checked. Behind him, you have youth, you have inexperience, and you have injuries. You can get over the youth and inexperience. We're talking about backups. But you can't get over the injuries. Cam Seldon was going to be the number two and eventually probably still will be. He looked good in the Citrus Bowl, but that was really only his first playing time running the ball in college. And he's out with a shoulder injury, had surgery during spring practice. I hear that he'll be back like late fall camp, early season. And it's a shoulder injury too. So anybody that knows shoulder injuries having to do with running backs, that's not an injury that you just come back 100% and you're 100% from that point forward. Shoulder injury is something that can reoccur. Just ask Jabari Small. He played through it for two or three years. And then the sort of the plan B as the backup was maybe Peyton Lewis, a true freshman. So he hadn't gone through practice yet. He had some cleanup surgery, I believe, on his shoulder when he got to campus. So that's two guys behind Dylan Sampson that have injury issues already. And those guys were already inexperienced. So if the season started tomorrow, and probably if the season starts when it's going to start, Deshaun Bishop is your backup. I mean, people know him from Carnes. I think technically he's a walk-on. He's like a three-star level player. He also has not played. He was out with an injury last year. And Khalifa Keith, who had like a handful of carries last year as a freshman. So you go from an all-SEC possibly caliber starter to inexperienced, walk-on, inexperienced redshirt freshman guys that have just never played. And I think that could be an issue. Now, it can work out if Cam Seldon comes back and he's healthy and good to go by like week two, week three. If Peyton Lewis comes in as a true freshman, he'll be recovered from his shoulder injury. And, you know, he's what you thought he would be, which is an instant impact freshman. But that those are both what ifs. You know, those, we don't know either of those things. If it were me, I would go into the transfer portal and try to get a veteran running back. One that can pass protect, especially, but one that can run the ball. The problem is you can't make these decisions in a vacuum. These days, you have to consider NIL. Are you willing to pay, probably overpay for a running back that's maybe going to be a backup for part of a season if he even fits well? And number two, there's this idea that you don't want to, quote unquote, disrupt the room. Dylan Sampson has waited his turn to go from number three to number one. He was underused last year. Could you get some chemistry issues if you're suddenly plugging in a guy that can play at the Power Five level? I don't think that should be an issue, but you have to think about these things in the era of portal and NIL.
Yeah, and as you described the running back room, though, it sounds like to me like you're sitting on a soft 17 in blackjack, and you're expecting a soft 17 to win you the hand. Like soft 17s, you know, you're hoping for the dealer to bust. That's how you win with a soft 17, right? Like you hit. And you try to improve your hand. That's the way I'm interpreting what you're talking about, the running back situation here. And with Dylan Sampson there, like, I think you try to assure him, hey, you're the guy regardless of who we go get in the portal, you know, but you need some help. And given the injury situations you talked about, it's like, let's bring you in a little bit of help here. But you're still the guy, you know, you reassure him of that. And you try to improve without hurting yourself at the top, and all the while knowing that, you know, if someone off the end of the depth chart doesn't like it, well, unfortunately, there's the door, right? I mean, that is kind of to your point, like the balancing act of playing the portal game. Like you want to get better, you want to add more depth, more quality depth, but you don't want to upset the top end of the depth chart in particular. If you have to upset someone on the bottom end, maybe that's not what you prefer, but that's a result you can live with. I'm wondering, as we talk about transfers here, because the portal is open, and you know, we've come to expect that the level of portal player in the spring is not as high of caliber as the portal players that go in the winter. Now, there are some exceptions to that rule, but on average, more talent is going in the winter than post spring practice. A lot of the guys that are going in the spring are going in for a reason. You know, maybe they learned that they weren't going to be the starter, or other reasons. Usually, you know, they're not leaving from a position of strength necessarily, but there are some diamonds in the rough, so to speak, to be had there. So besides running back, do you see an area, you know, after what you saw Saturday, what you saw throughout the spring, that's important for Tennessee to consider addressing?
They could maybe go and get a safety, but they shouldn't. Like, they shouldn't need to. There's like a number of options there that they shouldn't have to. So I don't think they are. Could they go and get a guard or just any interior offensive lineman, guard, backup center? Maybe, but again, they shouldn't have to. Like, the both of those situations are, if you've got to go get that guy, then you've got a problem with your development. You may have a problem with your coaching, Because if you've got five options at a position and you can't figure out a guy to fill that hole, then why do you think you can go into the portal and get a sixth guy and suddenly plug him into that hole when he hadn't even been in your system? So I don't think so. I think running back should be something that's really looked into. And Josh Heupel said a lot of that will depend on like the rehab schedule or projections of Cam Seldon, how quick he could come back, whether or not they'd look at running backs in the portal. The other positions, I almost think it matters more of what they lose. So, for example, like if two defensive backs went into the portal, okay, maybe you go and you look at adding one. If two wide receivers go into the portal, maybe you go and see what's out there. So I think that would be more of what I would look at. If Tennessee doesn't have a lot of defections, you really don't have to go get anybody except probably a running back. But again, I'm not even sure if they're going to do that.
We've touched on the secondary here, and we know how much turnover there was in that group in the offseason. And I think like the glass half full outlook, say back in the winter, was change can be good, and some of these younger guys are going to get opportunities now, and that could lead some improvement to the back end of the defense. Now, the thing we know about spring games is if one side of the ball is doing really well, that means maybe the other side of the ball is struggling. I would also add that I think the offense probably has a bigger advantage in spring games. I think vanilla offense going against vanilla defense, it's usually advantage vanilla offense. And also when you can't hit the quarterback, I think that's advantage offense as well. But, you know, just following up on what we talked about earlier, the quarterbacks had a good day on Saturday. So let's unpack the secondary. Is this just a newer group, or do you believe that this can be a better group? Because I've been hesitant. I know we talked about this a couple months ago. I've been hesitant to say that new equals better with this group. What's your gut telling you on this?
Yeah, you could certainly, for the fans or for anybody that says absolutely newer is better, that they were tired of the old guys that had just played, there could be a sense of like, be careful what you wish for. A lot of people had issues with Kamal Haddon, and I understand his on-field antics and all that. He's going to get drafted in a few days, so you could do a lot worse. But all that being said, they are very newer. There's 10 DBs are gone from last year. Seven went into the portal. Not all of them were starters, but seven of them went into the portal, and three guys are going into the draft. A lot of veterans, like every guy that was at least started last year in the rotation. It was like eight guys, I think. They were all listed as seniors, either fifth-year seniors, COVID seniors, or whatever. So it's an enormous amount of experience going out the door. Three transfers, and then a lot of younger players and a couple guys that have sort of waited their turn. That's the mixture that you have in the secondary. I want to say that's better. A term that the coaches have thrown out a lot is like, we're more athletic, that sort of thing. I sometimes roll my eyes at that. Like, okay, what is it? What is a, you know, that's like gauging your position based on, you know, their broad jump or something. Like, I don't care. Are they better football players? Are their instincts better? So yes, they are faster and more athletic and all those sort of things. But I think you're going to have natural growing pains of fitting all these new pieces together. That's why I hesitate to say that they're better, because my gut says they may not be better early in the year. The hope is that they're better later in the year. Jermod McCoy, the Oregon State transfer, is probably going to start at corner. He's played corner for like one calendar year. He was a wide receiver in high school. He just flashed last year at Oregon State, and they got him. So he's still learning the position. Jalen McMurray. So here's a good example about how people that watch the spring game judged it. Jalen McMurray got burned by Chris Brazel, the Tulane transfer, on a 71-yard touchdown, ran right past him. So Jalen McMurray is the Temple transfer that plays corner. He was called the most consistent of the bunch by Willie Martinez, the secondary coach. Well, he got burned for a 71-yard touchdown by your transfer receiver in the spring game. And a lot of fans threw their arms up and said, this is the best we got. Like, of the transfers, this guy's getting burned by our own guy. If you look earlier in the game, there's the same route. It's like a fade route that the same receiver, Brazel, ran against the same corner, and McMurray cut off the route, made a great play, and prevented a touchdown. So I can see why they like him. I can see where there could be issues. And a lot of that comes down to coaching. But so you could kind of see it go either way. Like they did not get elite transfers, but they did get transfers that you can see an upside to them. You can see what they liked about them. But you're having to mix those guys with other inexperienced players that you have. And, you know, I think every coaching staff in this era has the same conversation in the room about, do you bring up the young guys and give them their chance, or do you plug and play with transfers? And in Tennessee secondary, they're trying to do a hybrid of those two things. And I just don't know which way they're going to go, because they're probably going to play all three transfers a lot. But you've got young guys that they have sold as being talented that could be pushed out because of that.
You mentioned Brazel. I thought he was an important transfer pickup in the offseason. I know what he did in the spring game, looked good. We mentioned the caveats with spring games, but still positive stuff, promising stuff. Is he the real deal, and can that position group be better than it was a year ago, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the fan reaction to the spring game and some of spring practice coverage coming out of it was, hey, we're back. Look at all these wide receivers, you know. All you had to do was give Nico adequate wide receivers and he'd win the Heisman. And look, you just gave him five Jalen Hyatts out there. So I think there's a reason to believe that there is some overhype exaggeration to these wide receivers, but not too much. I said this to a fan the other day. They asked me if the wide receivers were overhyped. I said, it depends on where you're reading your hype. Because I think Chris Brazel, the Tulane transfer, I think he's the real deal, and in a different way than Dante Thornton was last year, the Oregon transfer, who was a disappointment, injuries, out of position. He looks better in spring, but here's the difference. Chris Brazel, at least the coaches have sold him as a guy that can run a number of routes, is well-rounded, deep guy, short guy, catch it over the middle, good hand speed, size, he's 6'5", all these different things. He's more of a well-rounded receiver. Dante Thornton is a deep guy. And we saw some of that last year. He was so uncomfortable in the slot because he had to run over the middle. He wasn't getting as much lateral routes. So I think they're different types of wide receivers. But if you can mix Chris Brazel, more well-rounded, with Dante Thornton, who at best I think could be sort of a, you remember Javonte Payton a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just going to go and you throw it up and every couple games I'm going to score a touchdown. And that's what it's going to be. That's more of what you would hope Dante Thornton would be. If Brew McCoy is healthy, that's more of a well-rounded target. Squirrel White, you get what he's done in the slot, just sort of a production guy. Anybody that saw Mike Matthews in the spring game or any little clips that you've seen from scrimmages, he is a five-star talent. Now, I will caution everyone, and don't listen to the sports writer here, listen to Josh Heupel. I will caution everyone that just because you're a five-star freshman talent doesn't mean you're going to be a five-star player in the fall. I asked Josh Heupel after the spring game about how wide he could have that rotation. And he said, you know, we love our talent, our young guys, but there are some young guys that will need to develop more facets to their game at wide receiver between now and preseason camp. And I think that was a hint to fans and to those freshmen, Mike Matthews and Braylon Staley, like, hey, we love what you did so far. We praised you through spring, but this is where like the praise party like settles down. Because there's a difference in talking about what your potential is and what your current skill set is. And Mike Matthews could be in the mix for sure in the fall. But, you know, he's going to have to beat out some guys, or this coaching staff is going to have to like widen its rotation from what it's used in the past. But I just named like five or six guys, and you only need three, and your quarterback's really good. So the answer to the question is they're not back to 2022, but I think this offense will look more like the two Hendon Hooker seasons than it will the Joe Milton season. And that's because I think your overall quarterback play is going to be better with Nico. And your wide receivers their talent is going to be maximized more with this quarterback.
Yeah. And when it comes to the topic of wide receiver depth, I mean, let's look at the facts, right? I mean, Josh Heupel wants to play fast. And if you're substituting wide receivers, you're playing less fast. And over the course of his career, Josh Heupel has never had a very deep wide receiver rotation. He wants three or four guys that he can roll with 75 snaps.
But every year he claims this year,
we're gonna
play more guys.
I'll say that's not true.
That's right.
But you know, when it comes to Brazel, I'm to the point where like it's not like this at every position. Mid majors guys, you know, or I guess I should say group of five guys, you know, I think they translate at some positions better than others. I think if you're a high performing group of five wide receiver, you can be a really good SEC wide receiver. I mean, can you catch the dang ball? If you can catch the ball, you should be able to catch the ball at Tulane, and you should be able to catch the ball at Tennessee. If you're a Power 5 guy who couldn't catch the dang ball before, you probably can't catch the ball just because you transferred. And Brazel, he was a star at Tulane, led the team in receiving. This sort of reminds me, I mean, they're not apples to apples players, but it sort of reminds me of when Ole Miss went in the portal, takes group of five Trey Harris from Louisiana Tech, goes to Lane Kiffin, and then has almost 1,000 yards receiving for Ole Miss. That wasn't a project guy. Trey Harris was a stud at Louisiana Tech. He was a stud at Ole Miss. Brazel was a high performer at Tulane. I think he can be a high performer at Tennessee.
I like Brazel's answer to this. I ask him during spring practice about how did you end up at Tulane? Like, you know, where did you develop late? And he did have a growth spurt, but he said, it's because of where I came from, small town in Texas. He said, they just didn't find me, which is a typical answer. But I like this about his answer. He said, I was always a guy. I was always a guy. They just couldn't find me. So that you like that in a wide receiver, sort of that overconfidence diva, like get me the ball kind of mindset. He certainly has it.
Yeah, and there is some truth to that. Texas has so many prospects that there are some hidden gems lurking around there in small towns that maybe are three-star guys that are more talented than that. We've seen that over the years. So.
Well, another example, Jermod McCoy, the corner I talked about before, was a wide receiver in high school, went over to Oregon State for a year, and they said, hey, I think you're a corner. I don't think you're a wideout. Plays corner, and he's like a freshman All-American. And you know, just learning the position. So that's another guy from Texas there's a billion of them. So in that state. And so sometimes you just miss guys.
All right, let's finish with offensive line. Again, it bears repeating. I don't know how good of an indicator a spring game is for your offensive line, because you're not facing a ton of blitz packages in a spring game and your defenders can't touch the quarterback. But as Tennessee exits the spring, do you see that group as a strength, weakness, somewhere in between? And do you look for them to try to add a piece at all through the portal on the O-line?
Well, the good news is that you can sort of hide offensive line deficiencies in Josh Heupel's offense more than others. You don't have to have a dominant offensive line. Their run scheme, you can hide things. And because of the tempo and the balls you run a lot of RPOs, the ball's out of the hand of the quarterback so quickly. You can hide deficiencies. You can even see some of the guys they played last year. They had issues on the offensive line last year, some at left guard, also at center when Cooper Mays was out. They led the SEC in rushing. They were number four in the conference and fewest sacks allowed. Like, you can get over it if you have a deficiency. They had three questions I thought to answer with offensive line coming into spring. Do you have a backup center? Do you have a starter at left guard? Do you have a starter at left tackle? Those are the three questions. They've answered one of those for sure, I think. Lance Hurd, the LSU transfer, he's fine at left tackle. He'll have some growing pains. He's a young player, but he was a five-star recruit. The body type looks right. They like his skill set. So they found a left tackle. That's number one. Check that box. Did they find a backup center? Well, I thought this was smart. They basically had Cooper Mays take most of the spring off and just said, hey, we're going to have these other guys play center, and they have to play every snap. And so they found options at center. Vison Lang is an option. They had a couple freshmen. Dane Davis played a little bit, which he did last year. So I wouldn't say they checked that box, but they at least are in better standing than they were at backup center when they came into spring. So that's like a let's wait and see. Starter at left guard, no. But that's not really something that I think they could answer, because Andre Carrick was a guy that played it last year. He was out with an injury in spring. Jackson Lampley could play it maybe, but they had an injury at right guard, so he had to play right guard in spring. So that's another guy you have to wait till the fall to find out. They moved Dane Davis from tackle to guard. They moved a couple young guys from tackle to guard. Like, they basically took anybody that didn't already have a starting spot and just crammed them into left guard and said, hey, here's a half a dozen guys. Surely somebody can win the position. But I think they left spring practice still not knowing who that guy is. Again, some of their options they can't see yet because they're injured. But I would say that's still that's an incomplete left guard. Backup center is a getting there, but still incomplete. Left tackle is they figure that one out. So they're in a better situation on the offensive line than when they came into spring. But there's still some things out there. And I'll say what I said earlier. If you can't find a left guard and a backup center by the time the season starts, that's a problem with development, and that's a problem with coaching, or that's a problem with recruiting. Because they brought in offensive linemen these past 3 years, like in numbers, and those guys should be developed. Now, the fact that Dane Davis right now is indispensable on the offensive line. That is a sixth-year COVID senior, former walk-on. He is indispensable on this offensive line because he can play backup center. He can play guard. He started at tackle. You shouldn't have to hold on to Dane Davis. He's a good hard player, hard-nosed player, but you shouldn't have to hold on to sixth-year senior, former walk-ons for that last year because you don't have a plan B. And I think that's a problem that they have to look at and they have to solve before the season starts.
All right, Adam will be covering all the comings and goings with the portal open. You can find his coverage over at KnoxNews.com. He's also got coverage of the spring game. And we're told that when John returns, he's going to be having a birding column on what he found in the prairies in Texas. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.